was, Iqbal concluded. These doors aren't budging. Come on, Annabelle said. Let's see what we can do about the comms. As they hurried toward the tower, the facility suddenly powered back up. Annabelle paused as the control tower's lights flared and the ALS engaged, its strobes and light bars illuminating the tarmac and surrounding area, to once again guide ships in for landing. Simultaneously, the hangar bay doors slid open. She winced as her comms unit blared in her ear, a dozen messages coming in all at once. Annabelle muted the device, took a deep breath, and then turned it back on to begin issuing orders. Her first priority was getting the facility back on track, and then figuring out what damage had been done.
Director Richards.
Ferg, is that you?
Yes, I am here.
What happened?
It appears we experienced a complex intrusion by an unclassified splinter. It cast a web through the system, cutting off commands, systems, and communications, and trapping my construct. It was unsettling.
Damage. He hesitated, which caught Annabelle off guard. She braced herself for the bad news.
I am not detecting any damage.
How can that be?
I'm running a complete diagnostic, but cursory inspection shows no internal damage to our network, framework, or operating systems. It didn't escape, Director, he admitted. It retreated on its own. I can find no trace of it in our system. I'm sorry, I...
Don't worry about it, Ferg. Damn it. That splinter had either left something behind or got whatever it wanted from them before retreating, and Ferg had been compromised.
Shall I turn myself in for a review? Thea is on standby.
Yes, please do. Thea. I'm here, Director Richards. Run another diagnostic, and get me an open comm line to the team. Chapter 51. Ace of Spades, Tanzania, Africa, Earth. Ryan climbed the metal stairs, crossed the catwalk, and then ducked into the corridor leading to her quarters. Once inside, she sat on the edge of her bed, her thoughts cloudy and her emotions spent. Her personal space no longer felt like home. Everything was different, and it wasn't just because Oni had tossed the room. In her desk drawer were her father's pictures, as well as little bits projections. All that trouble, all that risk, and for what? He was gone. She rubbed a hand down her face. In her mind's eye, she pictured the Spirit of Fire leaving the Forerunner Shield world as it blew to pieces. 11,000 souls. Alive because of John Forge. And because of his sacrifice, humanity had survived the Covenant's assault early on in the war. An unsung hero, a sacrifice lost like the ship itself. Tired, heartbroken, she lay back and closed her eyes. Ryan wasn't sure how long she slept, but she could tell immediately that Ace was grounded. She grabbed clean clothes, showered, then headed for the lounge. The crew wasn't around, and she didn't bother calling out. There was a rawness about her, a hypersensitivity, as though the tenuous thread she held onto would snap with the slightest provocation. A nod of sympathy, a pat on the back, a look of sadness. Anything might shatter the thin bubble of protection around her. As she turned to leave the lounge, that thin bubble broke at the sight of the armiger standing hunched in the doorway. She took a carefully controlled breath. Move. He didn't budge. Her blood pressure rose. Behind her, Spark called out.
Captain Forge. Ryan.
She turned to find the avatar above the lounge table's holopad.
I wanted to tell you, he started. I truly did. But when I attempted it, I could not do it. I did not want to be the one to cause such pain, but I know now it was inevitable.
He paused.
You have not asked me how I knew.
No, she hadn't. It was too new, the knowledge that her father was really gone, the accepting of it. For so long, she'd felt that he was out there somewhere, lost, waiting. But she also knew that she'd have to get it over with sometime. One giant, messy lump of details and more grief. She met Spark's gaze and stepped back into the lounge, waiting.
As 343 Guilty Spark, I had a number of interactions with species of the former Covenant, Sankili, Huragok, Sanshayam, as well as with humanity and their United Nations Space Command and Office of Naval Intelligence. I have been to many interesting places due to those meetings, and I gleaned such a marvelous collection of data from them. So much data, it would astound you. In fact, the number of...
Ryan lifted a brow and brought him back on topic.
When I was recovered and placed on your ship, I did as my nature dictated. I gleaned data. The name of your father's ship triggered an echo in my memory. It took several days, but I managed to coax this recollection from my memory stores. The Spirit of Fire routinely engaged in pre-programmed scheduled maintenance sheds and data drops. It was, or is, their hope to leave behind a trail, you see? Embedded within a recovered drop was a message to you from your father, John Forge. This message was left in every drop, a promise made by the ship's AI, Serena, and the ship's captain to your father. I should have purged the information, but given my nature, it is hard to part with even the smallest bite of intelligence, especially those that ring with such humanity. I have sent the packet to the data pad in your quarters.
His revelation should have come as a surprise, but Ryan was becoming used to the shocking, the unexpected, the awe-inspiring. It was part of their new normal. At least that's what she told herself, as she inclined her head and then left the lounge. In her quarters, she sat at her desk and powered on her data pad. She paused, unsure if she was ready, but with a steadying breath, she opened the data pad and accessed the message. An instant blast of pain hit her square in the chest. Her father's face loomed large in the frame, looking off to the side for a moment before he ran a hand down his scruffy jaw, then let out a heavy sigh. He was standing on a hard light bridge on a forerunner structure that Ryan now knew to be Etrin Harbridge, the Shield World. It was the same day, she realized, the same clothes and the same view as the video Little Bit had shown her. Only now he wasn't grinning. As he turned back and stared into the camera, she saw it all written in his dark eyes and the tight set to his face. What he was about to do, the decision already made. Her heart pounded, throat raw as she tried to swallow. He opened his mouth, shook his head, and then tried again.
"Hey, kiddo."
His words lodge in his throat, his expression searching, looking for the right way to begin. But there are no good words for this, no good way to say what he needs to. So he shrugs. There's nothing he can do now.
"I'm out of time, Lucy. This war, it's coming on hard and fast. When you see this, you'll be older. I told Serena to wait. Don't be mad about that. Little Hugh doesn't need to grow up with this on her shoulders. But..."
He shakes his head, a muscle ticks in his jaw. He is struggling.
"Can't go without saying goodbye. We have a deal, Hugh and me. Always be straight with each other. I'm not about to back out of it now. Without a reactor, Spirit will drift a while before she's found or makes it back home. Serena will hold on to this message and make sure you get it when enough time passes. She and Cutter promised me that."
He looks away, rubs his jaw again.
"Look, kiddo, what we're facing, it doesn't look good. There's a fleet of alien ships here, tech like we've never seen before. If it falls into the wrong hands, we're done for. You, your mom, your granddad, Aunt Jill, everyone. So I'm doing my part, okay? This is what it takes. This is a sacrifice I knew came with the job. You're the best thing that ever happened to me. Never doubt that. Never think that what I do now means I don't love you. 'Cause, kid, I swear my heart is full."
His eyes turn glassy. He knows it and gives him a quick swipe. The next part seems to hurt him the most.
"You're going to be one hell of a lady. I'm already proud of the person I know you'll be."
He stops, and his breath is shaky as he takes a moment to get a hold of himself before looking back into the camera.
"So this is goodbye. I'm so sorry. I hope one day you can forgive me for leaving you. Until then, chin up, shoulders straight, and you never, ever be afraid to take life by the horns and make it what you want it to be.
He gives a sharp nod, kisses his fingers, and then slaps them onto the camera lens. Ryan sat very still as her heart shattered, feeling every stab of pain, every break and fissure. The last 26 years of her life washed away, leaving behind a little girl who loved her father more than life itself and missed him terribly. Tears fell onto the desk. She could barely breathe, afraid that if she blinked or spoke or moved, the rest of her would break too, just crack into a million pieces. She lost all sense of time, her mind a daze full of hazy images of the past and the present. Her father was gone. She'd never get to rescue him, never fulfill the fantasy she'd lived with for so long of the moment he saw her face and knew she'd never given up on him. She'd never get to throw her arms around him and hug him so tight until he laughed and told her he was choking. Like so many others in the war, he died a hero's death. A soldier, a Marine through and through. He loved what he did, and he protected what was his. He was stardust now. She'd flown her ship through his final act, and leave it to him to go out big. John Forge had lived true to his beliefs, as he said, taking life by the horns and wrestling it into submission, even if that meant going out in the process. A warrior's heart and a wild soul. And she'd never see him again. It was all over. Had Ryan learned of her father's death early on, she wouldn't be the person she was now. She'd never have left Earth, wouldn't have loved being out among the stars so much. Everything she'd become was because of him. She thought of this other life she might have lived, of things like fate and destiny, and questioned whether any of it really mattered at all. Her mind told her it was all random. It was far easier that way. But her heart told her there were paths and plans, that maybe John Forge hadn't died for nothing. Maybe he had made an enormous difference, his single courageous act reverberating across the entire galaxy. She held on to that thought, rubbing her wet eyes, head aching with regrets and revelations, heart burning with loss and grief. And she let go of what might have been and embraced what was. Her calling was in the stars, with her father, where she belonged. Chapter 52. Mount Kilimanjaro, Tanzania, Africa, Earth. When her team checked in, Annabelle breathed a sigh of relief. No losses, some minor injuries, the worst being Agent Hahn's cracked tibia. Ferg had been working around the clock in conjunction with the stat bots, trying to solve the riddle of why Guilty Spark had wanted into their system in the first place. Ferg had had some success creating a timeline of the Splinter's movements within the facility's framework. The monitor hadn't just wanted them to shut down. It had been searching for very specific data, namely the repeated intrusion by an unknown catalog, which had been hounding Oni since its sudden emergence in 2552, along with the files on the other catalog recovered from the Savannah. Just that small splinter of Guilty Spark could have done massive damage, and yet it had withdrawn without any real harm to their systems at all, which was something of a conundrum. They might never know why. According to reports, the colored light shooting into the atmosphere, which had been witnessed by several hundred people across the area, carried what the AR team and Apollo claimed was a pod, seen hovering inside the hard light column within the mountain. Since the Armiger had stepped into this light, and two humanoid shapes were then seen floating inside, Dr. Iqbal theorized it was a lifeworker pod, and the other shape inside the light had been an imprint of the librarian. Annabelle had to admit the idea held weight. Despite their beliefs, however, everything witnessed by both teams was being run through Oni's knowledge base of Forerunner discoveries. That 343 Guilty Spark had actually made its way to Earth to hunt for the librarian was something Annabelle couldn't seem to wrap her mind around. She supposed she never really believed it would happen. One of the big eventualities they'd prepared for had occurred. They were no closer to obtaining the monitor than before, but they did have a new Forerunner facility to excavate, study, and learn from. The Torokado was on its way back to Onyx to do Barton's bidding, while Fireteam Apollo was off to rendezvous with the UNSC Infinity for reassignment. Annabelle's team, along with Bookworm's science division, was now engaged in what would be a very long process of cataloging and exploring the newly exposed site in the mountain. Annabelle made her way into the site, passing through the narrow passage and into the cavern, now flooded with light. The rubble that had nearly killed her team and the Spartans had been cleared away from the approach to the light bridge, reactivated by Dr. Iqbal. The hard light cast the entire chamber in a pale, otherworldly glow. Such an amazing feat of technology, harnessing photons and exciting them enough to form a solid surface, and stranger still to be walking on one. Annabelle hesitated, staring across the divide to the other side, where several scientists in white lab coats inspected the translocation pad, recording notes and taking readings, while a number of drones were mapping the interior site. Dr. Iqbal was across the bridge, kneeling in front of the terminal, studying something of note. With a deep breath in, then out, Annabelle headed across to the platform, imagining how it had looked to her team when they first arrived, finding the Ace of Spades crew with a Forerunner armiger. They'd been eyewitnesses to the column of light, to the armiger entering and exiting with something in its grasp. Dr. Iqbal sensed a presence and glanced over his shoulder.
Director.
Doctor, any idea where they might have gone?
None. We were able to access the translocation platform, he said,
looking up at the cylindrical column carved out of the rock and leading to the surface.
It's a static portal. Takes us to the base of Mawenzi's Peak.
So Forge and her crew used the portal and met up with her mystery ship there.
And the armiger, don't forget.
She smiled. Hard to. And the artifact?
No clue. I've watched the team's footage several times, as I'm sure you have as well. Most of it was hidden in the armiger's grasp, but it looks like some sort of metal box. Doesn't match anything in our database.
Any theories?
Not yet. But if it was the librarian's imprint he accessed, if he spoke to her, received something from her, it must be of great importance.
Perhaps something she'd felt was imperative to leave behind before the Halo's pulse reached her. Just a hunch, given what they knew so far. Annabelle glanced around the chamber again, realizing how much work was left to do here and elsewhere. Keep me posted, Doctor.
Of course.
Annabelle left him to his task and walked to the edge of the outcrop, staring down into the dark, then across the divide where the team had nearly been crushed by falling rock. Odd. If the armiger, controlled as it was by Guilty Spark, wanted them dead, all it had to do was deactivate the light bridge, and her ARs and Fireteam Apollo would have fallen into the darkness below. As with the intrusion into the facility's mainframe, it seemed the goal had not been destruction or damage. Guilty Spark had merely wanted to access their files and to interact with the supposed imprint of the librarian. And once again, they might never know why. They did have that light anomaly, though, which had been captured on the team's feed. For 3 seconds, this entire chamber had lit up. The footage timestamp had stopped and then picked up another anomaly 4 seconds later. Thea was certain there was a code within the light itself. And as for the crew of the Ace of Spades, well, they were living on borrowed time. Chapter 53.
For the record, we never left Earth. For the past week, the Ace of Spades has remained hidden. We are still on the continent of Africa, perched on a plateau overlooking the Tsavo National Forest. Ryan was not in the right mindset to concern herself where I took us when we escaped, so I kept us here, knowing our business was not yet complete. She has not seemed to care about anything for so many days that I began to wonder if I made a terrible mistake in telling her the truth about her father. She spent the days hiking the local trails, going through normal routines with the crew, and ignoring me as much as she could. A shade of her former self, And then, suddenly, like the sun returning after a long bout of rain, she came back. Still not ready to forgive me, of course. Though her agreement to participate in the ritual we are about to perform strikes me as a positive sign that forgiveness may be forthcoming. "Are you ready?" I ask her. Lessa, Nico, and Ram join us, dressed in the finest clothes they have, which for Nico is the same outfit he wears every day. Lessa has donned a dress, and Ram is wearing his salvager coat with its many stolen medals and ribbons. Ryan's dark hair is loosely braided and hanging over her shoulder. She wears a clean pair of pants and a type of shirt referred to as a tank top. I have already built the fire. The sun is just beginning to set, casting the land in shades of orange and yellow and pink. In my short life on Earth, we had many rituals for saying goodbye to those we lost. Songs sung, bodies painted, dances around a tall fire. We might have been a primitive people, but we loved and we mourned those we lost all the same. These actions do not change across the vast oceans of time, or with the rise and fall of civilizations. I believe there is a very good chance that we might never return to Earth, so this particular farewell matters. This time, I will say a proper goodbye to my home, my family, and my friends. I am letting them go. The life worker pod and imprint left without me. That, too, was a loss in many ways, a difficult choice after so many thousands of years, but the right one. I know that now. I will learn to look forward, not back. And so, as the sun sinks into the western sky, I begin to sing. I sing for Forthential, for Gamalpar and Venevra, for Born Stellar and Riser. I sing for Ram's lost crew, and the parents the siblings never knew, and I sing for John Forge and his great sacrifice. We write their names on the stone ledge nearby with red ochre and charcoal, and we send their spirits off into the west. We then stay a while and watch the sun disappear beyond the horizon. I admire the view. There is nothing quite like a sunset in this part of the world. The sky now awash with fiery pinks and oranges, purples and dusky blues. Eventually, the heavens turn black and the air grows cold. The fire is almost burned away. Ram is sitting with his legs dangling over the plateau's edge, smoking one of his hand-rolled cigarettes, a curious habit. The siblings are painting symbols around the names written on the rock behind us. Ryan sits at the fire, her fingers stained with charcoal and red. "Ryan," I begin, but she holds up a hand to silence me, and finally pulls her gaze away from the flames. Her look is stern, eyes hard.
"Why did you come here? What did you want from the librarian?" she asks me.
"I wanted to access the domain." This is partially true.
"Why?"
I can see this is my moment to be honest. This is her test. To find the memories, the ghosts of my friends, to join them or to bring them out, of which I am not certain.
"You would have left this world for what? The afterlife?"
"It is not an afterlife, but yes."
"Why did you come back then?"
"Because what I wanted when I first retrieved my human memories was to find those I knew, my friends. All the time I'd spent alone, it was all very fresh and startling and horrifying. So my immediate aim was to find them, to make the librarian return them through Agius, perhaps. But as I assembled my memories on Gyrinos A, and was then rescued by you and your crew, many things began to change. I now have my freedom, my programming is my own, and I no longer wish to be chained to the past. It is time for me to move on." She snorts at that. "For you as well," I say. This does not endear me to her, but it is the truth. We are the same in this regard.
What did the librarian give you?
A coordinate key.
To where?
A safe place, among other things. At this time, she does not press further.
Will you use it?
Perhaps, in time.
And until then?
I believe you are in desperate need of an AI to administer your ship. Her brow rises.
And you're the AI for the job?
No more lies, Captain. She gazes so hard at me, I wonder if my armature might crack in two.
No more lies, she says.
And yet, perhaps some things are better left unsaid.
Chapter 54. Ace of Spades, Slip Space to Shap System, September 7, 2557. After the ritual goodbye, they left Earth right under Homefleet's nose and jumped, heading to the Shap System and Myers Moon. From there, they'd figure out their next move. The first night in Slip Space, Ram made them a traditional Kamoyan dinner, with hardly any traditional ingredients, which, in hindsight, really made it just dinner. Ryan didn't have the heart to point this out to him, but Nico was more than happy to do so. They gathered around the table, joined by Spark over the holopad. After the meal, talk turned to the future, and Lessa asked the question on everyone's mind.
So what do we do now? I mean, can we go back to salvaging? Should we?
The mood grew somber.
We're not exactly in the clear with Geklar, Ram said. That bounty's still in effect.
And Oni won't stop ever, Lessa added. They know we have their asset.
Which, really, when you think about it, Nico said with a frown, is ridiculous. Spark belongs to no one but himself.
Spark gave the kid a nod. No one was thrilled with the prospect of a future where they were always on the run, always looking over their shoulders.
We're not the enemy, Lessa said. Instead of trying to learn from him, they want to lock him up.
In their defense, Spark told her, I did not make a good impression on the human military when I was a monitor. Neither did others of my former kind.
So, to recap, Nico said, our future entails steering clear of Oni, dodging what's left of the Covenant, and avoiding every mercenary and bounty hunter in the galaxy. So, like a normal week.
That brought a few laughs, and Ryan smiled as they finished their meal, while talk turned to Geklar and where he might be in the galaxy. The last several months had been a tumultuous ride, and she wasn't keen on continuing down that particular path. Could they go back to the way things had been before? With a little finesse and careful planning? Probably. It would take some doing, but most things could be made whole once more. Did she want to? She wasn't so sure. They could easily reap the rewards of Treniel. With the salvage currently in their hold, they'd never lack for credits or resources again. Though she wasn't sure they'd ever return. Plundering a planet-wide gravesite hadn't felt right, nor did the idea appeal now. And salvaging definitely lost some of its shine when it became easy. She thought back to the cavern beneath Kilimanjaro, the way the light had filled her up, and a strange figure moving out of the haze. She'd held on to her secret, and wondered if the crew had done the same. Ryan had seen the librarian. She'd gazed upon the ancient forerunner, utterly struck by the love and wisdom in her eyes, and understood at once how Spark could cling to his devotion for so very long. She understood why he called her mother, savior of mankind, nurturer. But even as Ryan had felt the stirrings of loyalty and love, she knew those emotions for what they were, a genetic disposition built into her very DNA, giving the librarian a way to be heard, a way to inspire loyalty, a way to nudge her children to fulfill their potential. Like any other human, Ryan listened. She heard, and she understood. The trials ahead, the battles to come, the safe place, the things that needed healing and tending. Take care of him. He is more fragile and important than you could ever know. She'd thought a lot about that moment over the last few days, unwilling to share it just yet, She'd felt conflicted, too. On the one hand, it felt like she'd been blessed. On the other, she wasn't too keen on the idea of being genetically predisposed to want what someone else wanted, though her choices were her own. And boy, did they have options like never before. With a souped-up ship like the Ace of Spades, thanks to the upgrade seed and an AI on the level of Spark, they could get into places most civilians or military personnel couldn't dream of. And, as always these days, she thought of her father. His sacrifice, the scale of war, the billions lost. Kip Silas's loss and the many who had died on Cedra, and more recently the millions gone in New Phoenix. It seemed the killing would never end. She thought of the horrifying prospect of the Flood, what Spark and the Forerunners had gone through, and knew in her gut that if that particular threat ever reappeared, and the various species of the galaxy didn't wise up and stop slaughtering each other, they were all doomed. Maybe the mantle of responsibility that the Forerunners had been so fond of wasn't a one-race responsibility, but an every-race responsibility. Human, Sankili, Kigyar, Ungoya. Post-war life had begun bringing small pockets of species together. If certain factions stopped making war, manipulating fears, clinging to their information and technology, and deciding for the greater good without the greater good's input, it might be the beginning of something better. One single act could make an enormous difference, could reverberate across the entire galaxy. John Forge had proven that.
Ryan!
Nico's elbow nudged her out of her deep thoughts.
What?
He gave her a weird look.
We asked what you think about the future.
They were looking at her expectantly. She let out a deep breath.
Well, Ram's right. We need to get the bounty off our heads. And Les is right, too. We're not Oni's enemy. We're not the UNSC's enemy, either. They might try their damnedest to paint us as the bad guys, but we're not going to live up to their expectations of who we are and what we stand for.
Nico tilted his head, curious.
What do we stand for?
I don't know, she answered. I honestly thought I did. But now, what I do know is that I'm going to finish what I started and find the Spirit of Fire. There are 11,000 souls still out there. And she had to believe they were. Ryan might not have been able to save the one who mattered most to her, but she sure as hell could save the rest of them. Her father would have wanted it that way. And if there was any way to honor his memory and his sacrifice, it was this. She met Spark's blue eyes, and he dipped his head.
I have no doubt, Captain. We will find that ship.
It was a tall order, but if anyone could help her achieve that goal, it was Spark. Ryan returned the nod, and then refocused on the crew.
After that, we have a hell of a fast ship. We can go places and do things we never could before. We have the Trennial loot, so we're all set with funds. We have the luxury of choosing.
Ryan picked up her glass of ale.
The galaxy is ours.
I'll drink to that,
Ram said, flashing a white grin through his black beard as he lifted his glass. Nico stood.
To the scrap.
To the stars, Lessa joined in.
To the father.
Ram nodded to Ryan, then to Spark.
And the mother.
Spark manifested his own glass and lifted it.
To friends.
Ryan leaned over the table as they put their glasses together.
To family.
And they drank.
They call us criminals now, renegades. The Office of Naval Intelligence spreads its propaganda through the galaxy, posts bounties and hounds us among the stars. But we have a fast ship. The fastest. The smartest, if I may say so. They are afraid. Of what we know. Of what we might share. Of where we go. And what we might bring back. They know what is still out there. What could return. Their fear is justified.
Epilogue. UNSC Infinity, Spartan Deck, December 2557. Novak entered his quarters and saw the flashing signal on his personal data pad. He tossed his gym towel onto his bed and sat at his desk. The message had no sender, no origin data, no timestamp. He passed it through a complete security check. It came out clean. Mysterious, but clean. As he read the brief missive, a small quirk twisted his lips. He shook his head and leaned back in his chair, his grin growing. He hoped like hell he never came across Ryan Forge again, because he'd sure hate to have to put a firebird like that behind bars. Tempting fate, that one. A deep chuckle escaped him, as he hit his comm unit to file a report, then stared at the message a moment longer. "Hey, big guy. I'm a bit tied up at the moment, so thought I'd throw a little luck your way since you seem to need it. Gek Lahr, you remember who he is, right? Is headed to Earth, specifically a refugee settlement in Quito. Don't mess it up this time."
Halo, Renegades, was written by Kelly Gay and read by Justine Eyre. Kamchatka, music from Halo 5 Guardians, was composed by Kazuma Jinouchi. The supervising producer was Michael Noble. Editing and post-production by Finn Eichner. This has been a presentation of Simon & Schuster Audio. Halo Renegades is available in print from Gallery Books. Also from Simon & Schuster Audio, Halo, Silent Storm, written by Troy Denning and read by Scott Brick, and Halo, Bad Blood, written by Matt Forbeck and read by Scott Brick.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.